There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
Now, I say UK-focused technology podcast, but anyone who's been listening to our live show, all of our patrons here, we spent a good 15 minutes playing an impromptu round of Guess That Hole, which I've got to admit is one of the most fun things that we do as part of this entire program of Text Message. Guess the Hole with Ian and Nate.
Yeah.
I think it could be a spin-off.
We're just waiting for Sky to call and offer us a show. We could be like that awful reboot they've done of Nevermind the Buzzcocks, or that awful They Think It's All Over show, or that awful League of whatever it's called.
We could make it happen. I mean, given that you did actually have a Sky TV series, and given work on TV.
Yeah, do you think Bloomberg would pick it up?
I'll be honest, I don't think Guess That Hole, in which Ian or Nate describes an orifice that is within their eyeline and the other has to guess. I just don't think it's crucial to, you know, Wall Street and the London Stock Exchange.
I did watch a very good Bloomberg Quick Take documentary on this young influencer that people has been causing a storm in social media circles. She's like 14 and does provocative dancing, and her parents are on board with it. Very good video, very, very interesting discussion.
Mm. There's an even better one that I made about how to make your smart home heating system. That went out this week.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet. You didn't send me
it's the best
link.
It's the best video we published this year. From me on the topic of central heating, I would say.
Oh. Yeah. You've really narrowed that down, though, to be very specific.
Yeah, well, the one you mentioned is actually better. but mine's pretty good, too. Anyway, let's talk about the news, because the government has announced that rules around taking liquids and laptops through airport security, they're going to be eased in the UK from 2024, from June 2024. This is according to a write-up on The Telegraph that I read first this week. The newspaper said passengers at most of the major UK airports are going to be able to carry liquids in containers holding up to 2 litres. In what will actually be the biggest relaxation of aviation security regulations in decades, bearing in mind that the current limit for fluids is 100 millilitres. Travellers will no longer need to carry containers in clear plastic bags, or, and here's where we get to the tech component of this end-of-year story that isn't about either Elon Musk, Twitter, FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, Donald Trump's NFTs, or bloody Avatar, or the other things we're not going to talk about. You also won't need to remove tablets or laptops from hand luggage at checkpoints. Isn't that amazing? The Department for Transport said major airports are going to be required to install new technology, which gives airport staff a more detailed image of what is in your sack as you're going through security. Although I suppose that's a bit of tech as well. New tech involved in that. And they've got a couple of years to put those into place. Less than a couple of years, actually. 18 months or so. So, with that in mind, Ian, I wondered, what's your favourite bit of technology to carry onto a plane? What's your favourite airport? Which aeroplane gadgets and time-wasting routine do you most enjoy at 30,000 feet?
It's been about 5 years since I stepped foot on an aeroplane, so it's actually a fairly difficult question for me to answer. I mean, obviously, if I'm travelling these days, it's a lot easier than it used to be. I remember going to CES one year with 2 different laptops because neither had the battery capacity to last a particularly long time. So I took one that I think was a sort of more of a work-focused one, and one that I took that was a slightly more watching movies on the plane kind of thing. But these days, I'd just grab the 12.9-inch iPad Pro. And that would be all I'd need to take. I wouldn't need anything else. I mean, unless I was working, in which case I'd need my work laptop. But that's 2 things, and they're not big and bulky. The one thing I'm missing is a good pair of noise cancelling headphones. And I lost my AirPods this week. And I was going to buy, was thinking about buying some AirPods Pro. And then I found the AirPods. So I don't need to.
So
they were in the car. They'd slipped out of my little mini pocket on my jeans, because the pair of jeans that I've been wearing are, well, I shouldn't share this information because it's humiliating, but I accidentally bought a pair of quite elasticated jeans.
Ooh, nice.
Very high lycra content. In fact, I mean, they're not tight, but if they were, they'd basically be leggings.
Well, they're going to go to waste.
Is that a pun? To waste.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So it's, well, they're not going to waste because they're really comfortable, because they're not like hard jean material. They're soft jean / lycra. So they're very comfortable. Anyway, it had slipped out of the pocket and was in the car. So I managed to locate them before the electric seat crushed it, a la Rory and the iPhone.
Ah, yeah. Wait, hang on. Rory and the iPhone.
Do you not remember when Rory smashed an iPhone with an Aston Martin?
No,
it slipped out of his pocket and went down in between the seat and the electric seat mechanism.
Well, funnily enough, no. But I do remember when Rory dropped an MP3 player down between the seat and the electric seat mechanism and crushed that. So
maybe,
clearly,
well, what was it? An iPod?
It was an iPod competitor from Samsung.
Right, no, I don't think it was that then. I think he did actually crack an iPhone.
I'm not
I need
surprised.
To check with him, though.
Well, Rory is one of many people who flew on planes to take us back to our previous topic of conversation. I'm quite excited about this because I do find that those bag checks are about the most distressing part of going through an airport, because they can be quite long, and there are always people in line who do not know what goes in where.
And also, this whole 100 mil thing is just ridiculous. And it always has been. It's security theatre. It's not helping keep anyone safe.
I don't know. And I don't think we're qualified to talk about that.
I've qualified myself. You don't need to be qualified for things anymore. You just say what you think, and that's as good as a fact.
Ah, okay.
If the bird sight has taught me anything.
Interesting. Okay. Well, here comes another fact. My favourite thing to take onto a plane is also an iPad. How woefully predictable.
Well, it is a bit predictable, isn't it? I think it's...
I used to take three, though.
Really?
Three devices. Yeah, I used to take two iPads and a phone, because the batteries never lasted long enough for a long-haul flight. Now I just
And these days, you can take a battery to top them up as well. Like, you know, there are big batteries that are still allowed on planes, like... what's the limit? It's something like 99 kilowatts, isn't it? Kilowatt hours or something like that. So you can take a pretty decent sized battery on a plane with you now. So that would run an iPad for almost any duration of flight, I would suggest.
Now, have you ever run into airport security when they felt the need to put on a rubber glove and ask you to take a step aside?
To check out my holes. I've never had them ask what's that hole, but they have. That laptop incident where I had like two laptops and a bunch of other stuff, cameras and things, they did pull me over then, because it was such an unusual amount of consumer electronics that they were a little bit suspicious. So I did have to explain myself there.
Roughly what year was this?
Oh, I don't know. I'm guessing it will have been 2008, 2009.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, laptops were quite bulky, and if you were taking multiple, it would have looked a bit suspicious.
Very
suspicious.
Bulky.
Yeah, because you could smuggle all sorts through that.
X-ray them. It's pretty obvious when you x-ray something what's inside it.
Well, it isn't, and that's how I ended up almost getting fingered by a security guard. Because I was going through, I think it was Berlin, it was one of the German airports, after going to, I assume, something like IFA, and I'd been there with, I mean, you might have been there, but Drew Stern was there. Mm-hmm. And I got one of his hard drives in my bag, but it was one of those rugged drop-proof hard drives. So it has, you know, a quite robust exterior casing that made it suspicious through the eyes of an x-ray machine. And I made the mistake of, and kids, never joke at airport security. They don't have a sense of humor, certainly not in Germany, certainly not in 2009, because I said, oh, sorry about that. That's not mine. That's my colleague's. He put that in there.
I remember this. And that's the one thing you don't say at airport security.
That's right. Anyway, I was asked to one side. I was asked to explain myself. The man did put on a rubber glove. I was relieved that it had a full five fingers in the glove. I was afraid it was going to use one of those, you know, single finger jobs.
Yeah.
One size fits all, but he didn't. He put on a full five finger glove and simply inspected the hard drive and let me on my way. But yeah, I learned that the hard way. I could have learned it a much harder way, but I learned it a hard way. That, under these new rules, would still be ill-advised at best.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Don't tell people you put a colleague's hard drive in your bag. I was going to say just tell the truth. I was telling the truth, and that's part of the problem. Just continue lying, basically. Say it's mine, I put it in there, and it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, but that really... It goes to the heart, really, doesn't it, of all the pointlessness of it all. Because, you know, yeah, sure, you didn't... It wasn't your hard drive. He, you know, Drew may have put it in your bag or something. But, you know, it's pretty obvious that you would, you know, not going to be carrying something dangerous for some unknown person. Like, there is a line, isn't there, between... Yeah, I occasionally catch the Australian border crossing control show on Sky. And they don't often make out a lot of nonsense about people. It's like, was one guy had some... seaweed that he was carrying through, very high salt content. And
good
lord,
I hope he's in prison.
Well, he upset the scanners, but because it had been given to him by a family member, he was like, well, it was given to me by a family member. And they were like, well, it's cocaine. It could be cocaine. And it wasn't cocaine. It was just seaweed.
But he was
treated like a criminal. And he'd just taken something from a family member. Now, I understand that you're not supposed to do that, but also family, you generally trust them, right? I mean, and if you didn't, you wouldn't take something for them.
Have you met my brother?
I have, yes. I probably would carry something across the border for him if he asked.
Well, your life choices. I do think that some of those rules are a bit extreme. I think they were put in place for good reason, but a lot of them were enforced a little bit too militantly. You know, particularly things like removing my headphones on takeoff, because I'm not supposed to use headphones on the plane. They were noise cancelling. There was nothing playing from them. They were just to keep the noise down. What possible difference could it make whether I had my headphones on my head or around my neck? They weren't checking whether they were on. They were just checking whether I was wearing them. That now they don't care about that, fortunately. At this point, a few years ago, they did. And I really wanted to get to an argument, but the better part of my head took over and said it was pointless. So
it's just not worth it, is it, really?
It wasn't. It wasn't. It really wasn't. But I think this will make a difference at check-in. I didn't see any mention of having to be able to show that your devices can power up. I believe that will still be a thing. So if you are asked about it, about what's in your bag, you may still have to still show that they can power on. And that's a rule that I think does make a degree of sense, that if you're carrying something through security that isn't obviously, I don't know, designed for purpose or what have you, as in if you've got a phone that's actually a bomb, then being asked to turn it on and show an app loading up is not a terrible idea.
I mean, but also... Because you're not fake that? I mean, I don't know. Well, it's not worth getting into.
No, I suppose not. I've never thought that that was a particularly stupid idea, and there are plenty of stupid ideas at airport security. So this is going through Parliament at the moment, and the plan is for it to be in place by June 2024. So if you want to have your liquids examined at Heathrow Terminal 5, then for God's sake, do it in May 2024 or sooner. Otherwise, you're just going to have to be trusted, and if you like that, then I suppose that's okay. Let us know any thoughts you have on this. Of course, send us an email: hello@uktechshow.com.
Good news, everybody. 5G coverage is improving, which I would describe as the minimal possible decent outcome for the billions of invested pounds and several years since the first 5G mast was erected. According to the BBC... Yes, go on. Hello.
You just said erect.
Oh, yes, I did say erect, yes. According to the BBC, around 70% of properties can now get 5G, up from 50% last year. Important to remember that's homes, not geography, which is obviously much harder to cover in signals. The BBC continues that there are around 12,000 active 5G sites in the UK, double from last year.
That is a lot, isn't it? That's more than I would have thought.
12,000. Agree, given how rare 5G seems. We'll come to that. Almost all of them are in England. Wales has 4%, Scotland has 8%, and Northern Ireland languishes at the bottom on 2%. And I've just noticed that.
That's incredible.
It is. I mean, you've got to remember that those Wales and Scotland are much more and Northern Ireland, I guess. Although I don't know if it's true about Northern Ireland. They're more sparsely populated. So the percentage sort of makes sense. England has 86% of the 5G masts. I don't doubt that there is some inequality going on there.
Well, there has to be, because there are not 86% more people in England than Scotland.
Well, there are what's the population of Scotland? Isn't it like 6 million people or something?
Something like that.
And there are like 55 million in England or something?
Is it that many, really?
Well, I mean, if the population of the UK is around 60 million, isn't it?
I've just looked it up. Yeah, 56 million in England. And yeah, your number, 5,500 in Scotland. But still, that doesn't really... I don't know. Maybe that is about...
But also, you can cover the populated bit of Scotland with probably quite a small number of antennas. It's when you get, but that's not what people need, really, is it? You don't want just the cities to be 5G. You would like, you know, to be able to get signal out in the sticks as well. Although, I guess if it's 4G, then that probably be fine. But anyway, so the numbers aren't equal, and there probably is a problem there. But who knows why that decision's been made? There's also been a massive increase in 5G traffic, which you would expect. It now makes up 10% of all mobile traffic, which is quite a lot, but not as much as you might think, I guess.
It's just not as much as I would think. I mean, if we've got something like, what now? So 70% of properties can now get 5G, and 5G has been out for close to 10 years. How long's we had 5G? Maybe not quite that long. Let's say 5 years in terms of being readily available.
First one was being switched on when I was at the Mirror. So what was that, four years ago, something like that?
I was at Bloomberg, which had been, and I think we did a video about it in 2016, possibly 2017, half a decade. I would have thought it was taking up more than 10% of mobile traffic, given the promise that it is designed in large part for being used as a mobile broadband service on the go.
Yes.
You know, streaming 4K Netflix and so forth, downloading podcasts like text message.
Yes, absolutely. Or doing speed tests.
Yeah, that's where I use an awful lot of my data, particularly towards the end of the billing cycle. If I've got data left over, I sit and run speed tests until it tells me I've run out. I'm getting what I bloody well pay for.
Well, I'm aware of that. But I still don't get it at home. Do you get 5G at your house?
I do.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nice for you.
It's not that good, but it was quite handy the other day when our internet sort of pseudo went down.
Hold on. I'm on 4G. I'll just do a quick speed test to see what I get at home. Should that happen to me?
So I mounted a phone on the ceiling like I did when our Virgin Media went down, back when I had Virgin Media. The 5G was very, very, very useful. When that happens, but it's not good indoors. It's equivalent to acceptable 4G.
Yeah, I get 44.9 megabits per second download, but I'm seeing an absolutely atrocious upload on O2, 0.45 megabits per second.
Yeah, it's always
awful.
It's always very poor, the upload, even on 5G these days. I find it still extremely poor. Extremely poor.
Yes. Well, boo hiss, I say.
It doesn't make sense because the capacity's there and people use far less upload bandwidth than download bandwidth.
Yes, they do.
You know, routinely, that is.
Yeah.
I'll do a speed test. I've got 5G. I'm indoors. I'm on EE.
Do you want me to tell people whilst you're doing that, what I've discovered this week, because I had very slow broadband and it was extremely frustrating, and then I was having a lot of problems where I just couldn't do anything. Everything felt very laggy, and I discovered that my Pi hole had had a problem and I had to restart it. And when I restarted, it was okay, but I still wasn't getting the speeds I was expecting. And I thought, you know what? I can't reach my router on its IP address either. It just won't load. So I thought, you know, I'm taking that thing out. So I took it out and put in a different router I have lying around. And I'm now getting full speeds everywhere on everything. Like, if I'm on wireless, I can get 350 meg down, 39 meg up, or whatever it is on Virgin. That router must have been absolutely banjaxed. So I tore it out and installed OpenWRT on it, Is it OpenWRT? I can't remember now.
Very nice. Well, I just did my speed test.
I'm still not using it, though.
5G indoors in Hertfordshire. I'm only getting 10 megabits down and 0.34 up.
Oh!
Yeah.
Painful.
But when I'm in the city, I get like 400 meg down. So it's not a problem with the network in the big built-up areas, but I am indoors. I have one bar of 5G out of four bars, and that's to be expected, but still pretty depressing state of affairs. Adam in the live chat says that he asks, wasn't there a problem with Huawei kit being banned that slowed the deployment? Yes, part of the problem it was more of a cost issue rather than time.
I think it's quite widely accepted that Huawei kit was the better stuff anyway.
Yes.
So the Ericsson kit that I think they're replacing it with was maybe not considered quite as good. So I don't know. I don't necessarily think it slowed it down much, because they were also allowed to keep what they already had for a while.
They're tearing it out now.
Has it been done yet? Isn't it January next year? It's got to be gone by.
It's in the process.
Yeah.
It's in the process. So this report that we were citing, and we'll include a link to this story and things in the show notes, as we always do, uktechshow.com. I noticed that 12 million households, close to half of all homes in Britain, now have the option of full fibre broadband. That is about three times the availability of last year, where it was about 4 million homes. So three times as many houses can now get full fibre broadband, which is pretty good. And 70% of UK homes could get gigabit capable connections.
I think I can now on a Virgin, but I don't want to pay for it.
Is there a discrepancy there? 12 million households, which is 42%, can get full fibre, but 70% can get gigabit capable. That comes across as rather strange, doesn't it?
Well, that doesn't work, does it? Because you can't do gigabit without fiber.
Yeah.
How odd. What is the top speed of that?
I think it's poorly worded. I reckon of the households that can get full fibre,
right,
70% of them can get gigabit.
Yes, that would be my
assumption of what it means, because I'm looking. Yes.
Virgin have up-paced their gigabit rollout quite substantially, I think.
For the downstream they have. The upstream is still absolutely pitiful, which is why I love GigaClear.
Well, yes, but you're very lucky in that you've got GigaClear. Most of us just don't have that luxury, or any GigaClear, other fibre provider. Frankly.
GigaClear is being rolled out much more widely.
And not here.
We're not sponsored by GigaClear. We make no money from GigaClear. I'm a GigaClear customer, and I think it's brilliant. But there are others. HyperOptic, I think they're doing a lot. City Fiber is doing a lot of rollouts. There are quite a lot of opportunities because people want it.
As far as I know, I haven't got anything at all apart from Virgin.
Kate in our live chat, I should just say, has pointed out that GigaClear did go down for 2 days this week. It's true.
Wow.
But...
That is quite annoying.
It is, but that's 2 days ever. We've had GigaClear now for quite a long time, and we've had that outage once. We had it routinely when we were on Virgin.
Well, I will say I have not had a problem with Virgin in this house at all. It's since I moved in and had to spend nearly a full day on the phone to them trying to get a new router sent out. I haven't actually had a problem it hasn't gone down, apart from scheduled maintenance, and that has been minimal. It's gone down maybe for an hour or something. But it has been pretty good, pretty reliable here. I guess it's very regional.
It is. It was an interesting outage that we had, actually, because the service was still there. It still worked. You could technically use it. But what it seemed to be was a problem. I was described as to Kate as being seeming like a problem at the backbone. Basically, it wasn't restricted. It wasn't like the local cabinet. It was most of Essex.
So had you been trying to communicate with someone else on that network, you might have been able to, but you couldn't get further than that.
It just seemed like the capacity just died away, so everyone was sharing a fraction of what would normally be the available capacity.
That's and the reason exactly I came to that happened then.
I think so, and I came to that conclusion because at peak times the downstream crumbled from a gigabit down to about 5 megabits, but the upload stream remained. You could get up to about 400 or 500 meg up. It should still have been a gigabit up, but it just looked like a capacity problem, which was an interesting fault to have, but it was quite frustrating, and the latency increased significantly, which killed the online gaming plans for my birthday. Thanks, GigaClear.
John said in a chat he had a similar issue with 3 when it was hacked and blackmailed, and it was DNS error. I will say it is always a DNS problem. Always. If you've got a problem, it's DNS. It's just the way of the world. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Al in the live chat says, I found it interesting that 5 years ago, OpenReach told me that full fibre here is technically capable of 3 gigabits per second. I think Al's in Scotland. They just swapped the headers into the cabinet to activate it, which doesn't surprise me at all. And I vaguely remember having a conversation with someone at GigaClear that the kit is capable of significantly faster connections than they sell.
Because full fibre, yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, you wouldn't put fiber in and go, no, we won't get the good stuff. Let's just pop in the old cheap 10 meg fiber. That'll do.
Yeah.
You know, you get whatever. And of course, technology with that sort of thing changes all the time, and you can change the laser wavelength and all that kind of stuff and add more wavelengths of laser light into a cable and use them separately. And there's also, it's very clever. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, but it's clever.
It's Kate says, can you just slip the engineer £50 and get them to make it faster?
I don't think that would cover the costs, would it?
Wouldn't that be amazing if that were possible? I'd pay it.
It's capped by software anyway, isn't it?
Well, change the software. £60. Let's up it.
We used to be able to do all sorts of stuff like that with Virgin back before it was sort of protected and all that kind of things. You know, like you could get a little adapter you put on who would give you free TV.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. Because the decryption was one code. So once people found out what the code was, you just pop a little adapter on and it would unlock everything.
It's basically what happened with DVD, wasn't it? DVD John who cracked that encryption. I had a beer with him once.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Nice guy.
These days, the encryption's much more every millisecond or something. So it's much more difficult. Anyway, carry on.
If you've got any thoughts on this, maybe you'd like to tell us how you used to hack the router of your broadband provider, you can let us know all your favourite memories at hello@uktechshow.com. Here comes interstitial2.wav. It's at this point that I generally whip out my sheet of thanks, which is similar to Santa's nice list. But it contains a list of patrons who I want to thank this week. Let's pick out some names here. We've got Daniel Faines, Roger Martin, Charlotte Steggs, of course, Alex Bailey, Matt Dawson-Jones, Matthew Riley. I mean, there are so many. We could never list them all in one day. But thank you to everyone who stuck with us this year. We love you all dearly. If you'd like to feel some of Ian and my hot love as well, you can join them and get the full version of Text Message every single week, access the back catalogue ad-free, listen live, join these wonderful people who are listening with us now, like Adam and Al, John, Kate, Luna, Mike, Nick, Rich, Russ. We love all these people. You get Extra Message, and we're about to release episode 100 of Extra Message, our sister show, just later on today, which is extremely exciting. Find out more, go to patreon.com/UK Tech. And if you're any kind of patron listening to our extended show, you're going to hear our next story, all about whether the mobile games industry is about to implode like an 8 billion year old star collapsing under its own weight. Well, we just had what is probably a conversation with the most bizarre tangents.
I wouldn't recommend that that's the one that people start on if they were thinking about becoming a patron.
I don't know. But I'll tell you who hasn't been discovering some of the worst things that exist on the internet and playing them out for patrons live. It's Mr. Tom Merritt, and he has been talking about tech news for the whole world this week, and it's time for him to tell us what they should go and listen to him talk about.
Well, this week on Daily Tech News Show, why a virtual K-pop group probably needs a new label if it's going to succeed. Dr. Nikki explains why that fusion reaction in California is a big step that still leaves us a long way off. Will Smith talks about the parts he used in building a brand new PC from scratch. I have a theory on why Amazon publishing a Tomb Raider game means we'll get more well-known characters in Lord of the Rings on Amazon. And Jen Briney shares her tips for becoming a digital nomad. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Yeah, we were going to talk about Amazon Tomb Raider, but decided there wasn't quite enough for us to say, but that is interesting. Amazon's going to publish the next Tomb Raider game.
Well, I was going to say, just Tomb Raider's an interesting one, isn't it? Because the rights for it have been a bit of a nightmare, I vaguely understand. Does Eidos still exist or not?
It's Square Enix that published it. It's developed by Crystal Dynamics, I think, but Square Enix published it. But now Amazon's going to publish it.
There's going to be a new game from that dude that did Bioshock. I've forgotten his name.
Oh.
And it looks exactly like Bioshock, but it's set in space. Can't wait.
Oh. Is there water?
No. It's space.
Yeah, I know, but there's water in space.
Well, there can be, if you take it. I mean, obviously there is water there already, but you have to find it.
Interesting.
I forgot what it's called. Why have I forgotten what it's called? It's a name of something. Oh,
Starfield,
someone
John suggests?
No, it's not Starfield. Someone will come up with it, I'm sure. And it's up to us to fill that until someone Googles it. I'm Googling it now.
Okay. Just while you look that up, thank you to everyone for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, it would be amazing if you would give us a review on Apple Podcasts. Drop us a star on Spotify, if that's where you're listening to us. Whatever platform you've got, if there is a way for you to recommend us or favorite us or share us or review us, we would be very grateful, because we'd love to enter 2023 reducing our plateau of new listeners and increasing, because we've got some interesting plans coming up. We've got episode 300 coming up. We've got episode 100 of Extra Message going out by the time you hear this. That will be out as well, and a whole lot more. Ian, have you found the name of the game?
No, it's Ken Levine, but I can't find what the name of the new one is.
Well, you've got until the end of the outro music to find it.
It's not going to happen. I'm typing. Can I find it? No,
bye,
I don't think I can. It's called...
Game over.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.